This is Application Paranoia, episode 8. So welcome again to Application Paranoia, our podcast about application security, DevSecOps, and AppScan. This is our twice monthly discussion around technical insights, assorted facts, and the latest news from HCL AppScan. I'm Colin Bell, and on my panel, I have, yet again, Rob Cuddy and Chris Dewar. Okay, in this week's episode, we're going to be talking all things DAST with Shahar. We're also going to look at some recent security breaches, and we're going to talk about AppScan news and various other fun things. You know. So, Rob, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well for the most part. It's been good here in California. The weather's nice, and we're kind of coming to the end of summer. Just hoping that things will start opening back up pretty soon.
So. And Chris, how are you doing? You actually got some vacation. I mean,
yeah, we went up to Stowe, Vermont, which was pretty awesome. 3 days, we got to play disc golf in three different courses. We've never played it before, so it was pretty awesome.
So throwing frisbees around, basically.
Yeah, throwing, well, they're not called frisbees, Colin. They're called discs, thank you.
Are they different to a frisbee?
Yeah, it's like Band-Aid and adhesive bandage. A frisbee is a type of disc that you cannot use in the game I play. It's flimsy plastic. These things hammer into trees and they'll fall apart if you don't use the right one.
Dang. Well, how heavy is your disc?
170 some odd grams, depending on the disc.
Wow.
So, yeah, not flimsy, not light, and it's aerodynamic.
So they fly better than a frisbee.
They fly ridiculously well. It's super fun.
Yeah. Wow. So how far away is the typical hole on a disc course?
About 300 feet. Can you throw 300 feet? Oh, is it fun? Yeah. I'm gonna help you with that. Yes, you can. Everybody can.
I can. You can do it.
You can do it. And just like golf, instead of ball golf, you're playing with discs.
Wow.
So, yeah, we actually call it ball golf because we have to distinguish, so it's kind of funny.
And do you have a caddy?
No, but you can. Some people actually do. They carry their bags around so they don't get tired during a tournament. I don't know if the caddy ever makes, driver recommendations like they do in golf, but, yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, one guy had his wife walking around with him. She's like, I get to go out and walk in the forest. And he's like, yeah, I just don't have to carry my bag, so it works out. It's a win-win for everybody. He's like, wow, that's messed up, dude.
Spends the whole time going, use the purple one.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, were you aware that during the current lockdown and with people being at home, there's been a huge spike in the number of people having plastic surgery done?
No time like the present, I guess.
but that's just it. No one's going to notice, Get that nose done now.
They will.
If you're doing it at home, they're probably going to notice.
Oh, man.
But it's true. Seemingly in the US, Japan, South Korea, Australia, there's been a huge rise in people coming in for treatments. All sorts of things from lip fillers to fat removal. You name it. It's all happening.
Wow.
Oh, boredom. People are doing this with their boredom. Just Netflix, people. Just Netflix.
Well, it's been interesting to me too. Because we've been at home so much, I was looking up things that we can and we can't do, and I actually came across a number of really odd and sort of fun, strange laws from California. Not that California wasn't strange already, but I'm going to share a couple of them with you because I thought these were pretty amazing. The first one was that in this state of California, it is actually illegal for people to hunt game from a moving vehicle unless the game happens to be a whale. Apparently, you can be on the shoreline and driving around shooting at whales in the state of California, but nothing else.
I feel like it's pretty obvious. What else are you going to hunt a whale on? You can't walk on water or swim out to them. Come on.
So, exactly. It's a boat.
That's what I was wondering. Does a boat count?
Isn't there,
count?
You know, like maritime law 10 miles out or whatever it is?
Exactly.
Why exactly. even mention whales?
Exactly. Right? Because what if you actually, you know, hit a dolphin or something?
Yeah, well, whales apparently are off the list.
Yes.
You cannot do that.
You should not do that.
Unless you're right? not in a vehicle, evidently.
Yes. And this may actually become a problem for Elon Musk and Tesla, because apparently in the state of California, a vehicle cannot surpass a speed of 60 miles an hour if there is no driver.
I don't even know what to do with that. Like, how would you get to yeah. 1 mile an hour with no driver?
Right. I mean, the only thing I could think of was like, you know, radio controlled cars or something like that. But I don't even push, know, again, is that really a vehicle, right?
You push it down a hill and be like, oh, thank God, it only made 55. There's no driver. It didn't go past. Oh, exactly. Thank you. I mean, it crashed, but it didn't break the law.
We forgot to steer.
When does that ever come up? Why is there a law for that? That must have come up at some point.
Something happened, right? Exactly.
Look, 1935. Oh, there's Bill again, but no driving his car.
Exactly.
I must dig into it, but I'm sure there's some pretty crazy Irish laws. Like, I do remember there being, and it's gone now, but in 1964, I think it went, but in Ireland, the penalty for, you know, attempting suicide was getting hung.
It's like, well, I mean...
Because it was illegal. It was an illegal practice. You know, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, it's like...
But that's somebody who really didn't look at the cause and the solution together. They just said, yes. Yeah,
exactly.
Something bad happened over here. We don't know what it is. Hang them.
I'm sure you have some crazy laws up there in Manch Vegas, no?
Yeah, yeah. Turns out on Sundays, you can't look up while you pee. Like, A, how would you know? And B, why is that a law?
You can't look up.
So you can't look up while you're relieving yourself, yes. You must look down, apparently, at the job you're performing.
Oh, so you can't have a pee the highest competition.
No. Yeah. You cannot.
You have to see the target.
You know? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not spray and pray here, I guess.
Yeah.
Am I correct in saying only on Sunday, though, yeah?
Only on Sundays, yeah. I mean, other day you're allowed to, you know, look up and go crazy with it. Just get it in Monday through Saturday, because that's it. That's all you get.
Wow.
You're not allowed to pick up garbage in a national forest that's supposed to be... Think about that.
You're not allowed to pick it up.
No, you get fined. Like $150 if you get caught picking up trash. Why?
See, that sounds like a union thing right there.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody's job being protected.
Stop helping.
No one helps. Exactly. How dare you? It's
but on
compost.
The plus side, I mean, we do have one redeeming quality for our laws, which is you're not required by law to wear a seatbelt in New Hampshire, and we're the only state where that's a thing. So, ha!
Wow.
We've got some. That's our live free or die. You don't have to. It's strongly recommended, and if you don't, you're probably going to die, but you don't have to.
Wow.
So, wow. We give you the power of choice in just that one spot.
So what if you're picking up trash from a moving vehicle but not wearing a seatbelt?
As long as you're not hunting whales.
Yeah.
I think we only have one thing, Chris, on AppScan News since... And I guess it's because we're in the summer, maybe, but
yeah,
we had a release on July the 19th, and, you know, maybe there's a new one coming out as we're... But we can talk about that next time. But so in the July 19th, anything catch your eye that we should be letting people know about?
Really just quality of life improvements, which we like to do because, you know, makes the tool easy to use around CSV exports. Apparently, the fixed group ID is now included in CSV reports. And if you really want to know why that matters, that fixed group ID can be used in APIs or things of that nature.
Sure.
Where you make a call to get the fixed group itself. So it can be beneficial for people who use automation in that regard. But really, some translation drops. So if you're, you know, not English speaking, that's super helpful. And it's always good to have translation drops. So you're not seeing some of it in your language and some of it in English, which is the default if we can't find the translation for that language. So that's nice.
Yeah. Because we haven't got too much more on the news front. I mean, in terms of the next sort of workload that's coming for the on-prem products, it's that sort of earmarked for a particular date, or when would we see those sorts of releases? They typically come in the fall, as you call it, or the autumn, as we like to call it.
Yeah. two names for the same thing. It's like, what is it? Salad and lettuce. Oh, man, let me tell you. Salad is salad. Lettuce is lettuce. Use the right word. Anyway. That's American for you. We demand everyone bend to our words. That's not the way it works. We try to get 4 releases out a year for that, so it's probably going to be quarterly. Expect it to be at the end of this quarter for 10-0.
Yeah, so it's kind of Octoberish, yeah. So yeah. Well, there's likely to be some good things in that, from what I can gather as well. So we'll look forward to that.
One of the things we wanted to get into the recent release, but didn't have the runway for it. So there's a lot of good stuff still coming.
Excellent, excellent. You know how I've been sort of doing my running bit, and I'm now up to today. I'm up to 129 days in a row of running. Sheesh. But about a week ago, you know, all of a sudden my data wasn't loading up. So people that might have been thinking, oh, he's finally stopped. Suddenly my Garmin didn't work anymore. It wouldn't upload the data to Strava, which is what I've been doing, you know. And as it turns out, it's because Garmin got sort of done for, effectively is a ransomware type thing that was inflicted on him.
Yeah, I heard a bit about it in the news. It's pretty wild. Nothing was working for them.
Yeah, they were down. It happened on, I think it's the 22nd or something like that. And they still didn't have anything back up until around the 24th or 25th. So it was a long outage. And the rumor going around is that they actually paid the ransom. So,
I'd be surprised how often that happens, honestly.
There's a number of sites that have been looking into it and actually proved that the ransom was paid. There's one that's referenced from bleepingcomputer.com, which, you know, probably that they looked at it in the first instance, but they also proved that they had actually paid it because of the date timestamps on some of the files. But it was rumored to be in the region of like 10 million was the ransom, you know. So I just find it fascinating that such a small thing can bring down. Well, it's probably not a small thing, but it's like it's led to quite a serious sort of aftermath. And you'd have to wonder how that affects Garmin's business going forward, because as a user of Garmin, I'm not sure if my data was compromised or what happened, you know. But not that, you know, finding out how many times I run is really of great interest to anyone, but still.
No, it's private information, though, because if you go on a run, then people who might want to know that you're not at your house. It's stuff that, you know, can be plugged into other things that you don't normally associate with running.
Exactly.
It's information about, you know, habits and when he goes on a run, et cetera. It's just scary stuff.
But there are other companies as well that have been, have fallen for similar things, you know.
Yeah. Well, and the thing too is it's so personal, right? So it's where you are, it's what you're doing. I saw it through cycling magazines, so you saw it through kind of the running side of it. But you know, cyclists and fitness gurus and hikers, you know, lots and lots of people doing that, and they typically have it connected to kind of a health profile. So, you know, they're tracking things like their pulse rate every day or, you know, weight up and down, all of those kinds of things. But the scariest thing to me about the Garmin thing was that, and I didn't realize this until, you know, we started looking at it, but there's a whole section of it that is with the FAA here in the U.S., so the Federal Aviation Administration, and there's a pilot version. So now you're talking about aircraft and Garmin capabilities being used in flight. And so that takes that to a whole nother level, right?
Yeah, the outreach was quite substantial, yeah. So,
but I'm curious to think that with ransomware anyway, it's not necessarily a flaw in your actual code or in what you built or anything like that. Somebody just got in and encrypted all your dang data so you can't get access to it, which is horrifying. But it doesn't necessarily mean that your data was compromised. It just means that nobody can access it.
Yeah, they put an encryption key on it, and you have to pay to get it decrypted. Yeah, it's called the Wasted Locker, so that all the files get sort of inundated with a tag at the end called Wasted. So you end up with everything being changed, and you have to decrypt. But I'm kind of curious why. Does it not suggest that they've maybe not backed up their environment?
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so easy to bring a system that an entire environment back from backup. I mean, it takes time.
No, I suppose not. And it's probably far reaching into lots of different things as well. So.
Yeah, it's probably extensive, you know, all over the place, right? Multiple data centers, multiple locations, and you've got millions of endpoints that you're dealing with, so...
And it might even be a cloud provider that you're using that you say, store my data for me, please. And
right.
They have to have good backup policies and all that. What if they don't? And the last one got corrupted or whatever the case may be. It's a scary thought. You really got attacks on all fronts that you got to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just code or your firewall or your network, but also your dang data. Make sure you can get back at it if you need to.
Right.
And test it. Don't just build it. Test it.
Yes. Yeah, That's amazing to me too, Chris, right? How many people have a disaster recovery plan that they never test?
Yeah, we think it works. If we press this button, it's not working.
but even more so than that, you know, your disaster recovery isn't really covering all the types of disasters that are out there. So I question how many organizations had a pandemic as part of their disaster recovery plan and how they're going to... How are people going to work from home now? We did it very well. We did it really well because we had that sort of infrastructure in place, but lots of organizations didn't have that and really struggled with it. Yeah.
It's kind of like the zombie preparation plan that the U.S. government put in. Like, they actually have one, no word of a lie. Zombie apocalypse plan. What do we do? Yes. Who knows if that button works either, but...
Zap for short.
Maybe that's what's happening now.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Maybe. While they're out hunting whales.
Yeah, in their car, picking up garbage. Exactly.
The other thing that happened, and I don't know if you guys want to talk about it, this is the Twitter account hack.
Well, the fact that it happened, right, and how easily it was for every major kind of celebrity and influencer to get hacked and basically put out the same... You know, you give me 1,000, I'll give you 2,000 type thing. It really, I think, speaks to the fact that people are still kind of the weakest link.
Yeah, it's a social engineering thing, really, and that's the same with the ransomware. They think that was socially engineered, you know. So
right,
it's like a scene from Mr. Robot. He went into this super secure, highly fortified fortress that had no network access whatsoever. And he was just looking and he says, I see 5 vulnerabilities and there are 5 guards walking around. It's crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
People.
But I mean, that's what it goes down to. You go to any conference where CISOs are today and you're going to be guaranteed to hear something about phishing and social engineering and impersonation, right? And how easy it is for people to go on LinkedIn, get all the information, you know, like you said a few minutes ago, Chris, right? What your habits are and what you like to do, and then craft something that makes it look like it comes from you, and then somebody responds.
Yeah.
I saw one of those live action, social engineering attacks that they did at DEF CON. It was amazing. I mean, I'm not going to say the company, but they were 2 seconds away from getting in. They just ran out of time on the timer. They were 2 seconds away from getting this guy to download backdoor onto a system, pretending to be tech support to help him fix his computers. It was wildly shocking how easy it is to do.
Then it happens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This week, it is my pleasure to introduce Shahar Sperling to the world. He is our chief architect in application security. He's worked on the product that he's been dealing with, mostly DAST. But he has his fingers everywhere, really. He deals with SaaS, he deals with DAST, he deals with IaaS, and the cloud offering, everything. So, without further ado, Shahar.
Thank you, Chris, for this lovely introduction.
So, Shahar, we've done a lot of conversations with different parts of the product, but we haven't talked to DAST. So, I know you can talk about anything, but we've specifically brought you here so we can talk about some of our DAST things. And
Yeah, and also, yeah. If you could cover from like a 50,000 foot overview, what DAST is and why people need to know what yes. DAST stands for and what it does.
Yes, and why they should care.
Why do they care?
Why? That's a good question. So DAST, dynamic analysis, security testing, was really the forerunner of automated web application security testing. And initially, really, it was designed, sort of configured for penetration testing. That was the method for testing web applications 20 years ago. That's just to mention that Appskin is going to be celebrating 20 years of life this year.
20 years young.
Yep. Or next year, actually.
It's almost ready to drink. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. That's really dynamic analysis in a nutshell.
Hacker in a box.
Yeah.
Maybe talk about some of the really good stuff that came in our version 10 release, you know? Just some of the innovations that we brought with that to the DAST program. You know?
So, again, if we talk about 20 years ago or 15 years ago, applications were very simplistic. They were really resources that you were trying to get. There were URLs and things that were just fetched, just static data that was brought forward, presented. And then the application could act on those requests to do some work. But really the content that was received was fairly static. There wasn't a lot of client-side work that was done. As far as a client was concerned, everything was pretty much static. As the year went by and everything evolved and we got hyper-active client-side JavaScript elements and everything that goes into developing a modern so-called single-page applications and progressive applications and all those terms that are being thrown around, we had to bring this technology forward. So that was one channel of evolution, the technology around it. So in the last few years, we've changed our model from all that old sort of request, sending a request, getting a response, altering that request with a malicious payload or a payload that emulates a malicious behavior, and sending it to the application, receiving feedback and so on, reflection, what we call reflection. We had to change that basic model into a model that's more browser-centric. So if we look back 4 years ago, we've gotten into a DOM-based model, what we call action-based crawling. It's really looking at the application from the user's perspective, what the user experiences when they're exercising actions in the application, their browser, and not really looking at the sort of low-level request response HTTP stuff. So that brought us forward technologically in a great leap. It made all the difference in the world. But what we were still missing, and what we were trying to cover in the last year or so, culminating in this V10, 10.01, 10.02 that's coming soon, is aligning with the rest of our portfolio and approaching development. Okay, developers specifically, but also the development lifecycle. So again, beyond being able to handle modern technologies, we had to adapt dynamic analysis for modern processes and making it more sort of approachable to, again, developers. I think three things that we introduced in this V10X cycle that are very, very significant. The dynamic test policies or optimized test policies that we've introduced. This was a very interesting project that we were able to get out of our cloud offering. So now that we have a lot of data, a lot of insight into real-world vulnerabilities, we could actually do some very interesting studies and take those studies back into our scanner. And now you could choose the level of detail in which you like your application to be scanned. So sort of what we did with static analysis recently, letting you play with a slider. So it tells, you know, how deep you want your application scanned, how detailed you want the model to be created. So we sort of apply the same logic, or at least the same motivation, to dynamic analysis. And that's saying we have somewhere on the order of 8,000 different rules in dynamic analysis. Not just the straight rules. Our rules sort of spawn their own variants in different cases. And so you could get a multiplication of many thousands, many tens and hundred thousands of combinations. Cross-site scripting, I think it's 500 million different combinations that we can create. What we did was sort of look at what is the probability of a certain issue or a certain attack being successful. But we can put a scale, we can score the success rate of our rules, not just from the quality of the rules, because the rules are good. The prevalence of a certain vulnerability in the wild. What is the chance of a certain vulnerability existing in an application, in any given application? And we went through thousands of cases, looking over tens of thousands of issues, and being able to sort of classify the odds of a certain of any given application being vulnerable to a specific attack. We can put that on a scale, and that's our optimized test policies. We've gotten to some great results with that. The problem is always time, right? This is why we do this. When we talk to development, it's not the thoroughness of the scan. It's how quickly you can get it done and what you lose when you sort of play with the sliders, right?
And that's probably the biggest question we get asked is, especially with customers, is, If I slide it all the way to the quick side, what am I missing out on? You know,
exactly.
So what sort of things do get compromised?
So that's a good question. That's what we were trying to really avoid. So what you're losing, almost 100% of everything that's lost, are really low severity issues. You would also lose some third-party vulnerabilities. So we have, I think, 3,000, close enough, of third-party vulnerabilities that we can detect. We have other technologies to cover that, right? With open source analysis and things of that nature. And that means, you know, if we reduce a lot of those tests, you're not going to have all those third-party libraries in your code. You're going to have 2, 3, 10, 15 third-party libraries in your code. And we are testing for hundreds of third-party libraries. So all of those get reduced, and you're going to be missing sort of edge cases. Let's say cross-site scripting. So we have dozens and dozens of variants that test for cross-site scripting. Some in very, very odd places, you know, things we've once seen, and we create a test for it. Very, very unlikely to get an injection, right? The certain spot on a certain attribute in HTML content, but we have a test for it. If we find that this vulnerability or this attack, this rule, isn't successful at all across thousands of scans, we have pretty good confidence, pretty high confidence that this is an import. Right. We can reduce that. We can reduce all those overall number of tests. But we learn from our system is sort of learning. And we actually have a mechanism that prioritizes tests if they haven't been sent in a really long time. That sort of gives us a confidence that we're not just feeding our own system. Right. If we don't send a test, it's not going to find anything. Right. So if we take it out and we keep looking at it, it's not going to find anything because it's never being sent. So the system sort of raises the priority of that. And then after a while, we start sending those tests again just to make sure that they're still irrelevant. The rules that we filter out, we keep feeding them back in periodically. So we sort of maintain a high level of confidence. And that's what you're going to lose, really. When we look at the high severity issues, we're still going to find, I think the latest numbers are over 97% of the high severity issues.
And I think what you're saying is really, really important because it gets right to the heart of the risk discussion. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about being able to balance finding risk early in being able to say that even though we're doing this at the fastest speeds, we're still catching most of the critical vulnerabilities so that you can resolve them sooner. So what would you say in just recommending to folks kind of as they're walking through a process there, if they're thinking, hey, we want to, you know, interject DAST into our development cycle, where do you think are the optimal points for people to do dynamic testing?
So again, from my perspective, being a DAST person, I think DAST can fit anywhere. It has advantages and has disadvantages, just like any other technology. I do believe anytime you do a large integration test, okay, of your whole system, that's a very good spot to do this. We do have additional improvements in V10. We're talking about incremental scanning, and that's going to become a more and more important part of dynamic analysis, allowing you to incrementally scan your application. If you're using personal builds, which we use, I know a lot of companies do that, before you push or pull or deliver or whatever it is you do with your source, and you run a personal build, right? You run a version of your application and you can test it. It's at that point that you could do a very quick, you know, 3-4 clicks, which you can do today with Ask an Enterprise. A lot of our customers do that. They use a quick scan functionality in Ask an Enterprise, which allows them to just record a short sequence of actions and then test those, just that. What incremental scanning does is saying, okay, you have this sequence, but we've seen this sequence before. All you did was maybe add a field to a form. So why test everything? Let's just test that field. And incremental scanning, so right now it's looking at the entities, right? Parameters and cookies or URLs that we're finding, other stuff. As this develops, and the future of this is that we are going to get better and better in understanding whether an application has changed. So maybe in the future, we'll see if something has changed in the application, then we can test those areas. If you've made these changes, these sort of changes, which people do all the time, they add, again, they add fields to forms, or they add content to their page so we can see new requests coming in or new responses coming in, and we can test those. So now a scan that used to take 15 or 20 minutes or 30 minutes, if you're just, you know, a few pages, could literally take a minute or two.
Cool. See, that's a big deal, right? Because I think the argument for a long time, and you touched on it before, was time. Developers, you know, today, I think, want to code securely. They want to know that their code's going to work. They don't want to get that, you know, the back end. So being able to do a sanity check at the time that they're doing a check-in or a commit or a personal build, whatever you want to call it, right? But I think historically, right, it's been, yeah, I know I got to do static testing, and they think that that's enough. So getting dynamic to the level where it can be quick and easy and only looking at the subset of what they've changed, that's right. A big win.
That's the big promise of incremental scanning, and we're going to see more and more of that.
To take this on a slightly different topic, I know that we've been doing a lot of work in looking at the capacity of our scanners and how many scans can run concurrently, and we're doing that for some of our very big customers. Can you maybe just enlighten us a little bit on some of the results we're getting from that and what we're actually seeing from our testing and at scale?
Yeah, so you're talking about our particular customer that we have. well, that actually has some very promising advancements that we've only hit on this last week. The team has been doing a great job coming up with the scale. We are very optimistic with the results we found. We're going to get a performance out of specifically Ask an Enterprise, where if you're running one scan or 100 scans, you're barely going to notice. Dynamic analysis is restricted by a lot of moving parts because you have your tested application, right, and the speed in which it responds. You have network latency, which may or may not be an issue at different organizations. And then you have the processing itself. And when you talk in an enterprise environment, all that data has to flow into the enterprise environment. You have a lot of users hitting that environment at once, you know, wanting to get results and looking at their progress. And our goal is really in the hundreds to allow you to be able to launch 100, 200, 300, if I'm being really hopeful, scans at the same time. Now, that requires resources. So,
And there's not really many customers that really go to that sort of scale, but it is reassuring that we can reach those sorts of levels, really. So.
But we really intend developers to do this, right? To go, click a couple of actions in their application, press a button, get a scan, and rely on the dynamic analysis to make sure their code is secure before they sort of push it into their branch or whatever. If we're serious about that, we have to give them the environment that will support it. So, you know those organizations. You have organizations with 2,000 developers, right? 8,000 developers. We have
But these aren't particularly big scans either. It's not like the monolithic, this scan's going to take 2 days to run.
It's not going to take 2 days to run, but there's still a lot of scans, right? Today, you're talking about a dozen people at any given point running scans, tomorrow or next year, I want, 200 people at any given time out of an organization of 2,000 people. I want 200 people to be able to run those scans all the time. So those scans aren't going to be, large, but there are going to be a lot of them. So you get back to the same numbers. And that's what we have to be able to support, and we're going to.
Yeah. Well, and you're even seeing QA teams coming into the mix now where, we've met a handful of folks where they have traditionally done functional and load testing, performance testing, that kind of thing. And now they're getting asked to add security testing to what they do and sort of filter that back. I think what you're saying is it getting exponentially larger, the people that want to run scans. I'm curious though, Shahar, we've talked a lot about sort of the development side, the QA side, right? The teams that are actually running those. What would you say to the executive level and the CISOs about why DAST is really important, what we're doing around risk, and how does that help them?
I think coverage is a big issue and something to consider. We're not running these technologies, right? We don't hold these three or four technologies that we have today because we're sort of fond of them or we have some sentimental connection to them, right? The reality is static and dynamic and IaaS have a lot of overlap. They meet different needs for different people. But technologically wise, they have an overlap, but it's not complete.
Right. And if you were to look at the the Venn diagram of SaaS, DAST, and IaaS, what does DAST do best, you feel, versus the other two technologies?
So when you're talking about client-side vulnerabilities, and there are, again, we just as I mentioned, there's a lot of logic that goes into the client side these days. When you're talking about client-side vulnerabilities, whether they're pure client-side vulnerabilities, like client-side cross-site scripting, which used to be known as DOM-based cross-site scripting, SQL injection into, the local storage, right? SQLite that is in all the browsers today. It's unparalleled in accuracy, right, in identifying the risk. Now, static analysis in particular did make advancements in the last probably couple of years in trying to target client-side technologies and JavaScript, and particularly around Angular, where it's a little more structured with TypeScript. Reality is that those vulnerabilities are best assessed in their environment, and that's the browser or something that emulates a browser. It's only when you compose a full page that you can be absolutely certain.
So maybe just a final thought on DAST and maybe something on the future.
Yes. So I think, again, the future of DAST is going to be in that incremental work that I mentioned. I think opening up our minds to unusual solutions for DAST. One thing I didn't mention because it's more technological is ADNS, AppScan Domain Name System or Server, or whatever we called it, that we've introduced in 10.01, which really helps us. It sort of breaks through our ability to test for things like command executions, you know, things that aren't reflected. Yeah. So out of the box, out of the black box, thinking that we want to see more of, and I think that's true for all our technologies. Is you're going to see them coming together more, right? So the future of DAST, it's going to cooperate a lot more with IAST, mm-hmm. Maybe in the old black box model. Maybe something else. Correlation is going to have to be a big thing in our future. So that'll be sort of connecting dynamic into static.
And static, yeah.
So that's not specifically for DAST, but for DAST, rejuvenate it. And again, make it more accessible, more relevant for a development world, this development lifecycle.
And for those wondering, if it was easy, we'd have built it already. It's ridiculously difficult to correlate or to put the two
together.
Yeah,
it's the holy grail, really.
It is, but...
the impossible mountain, the unreachable star. Yeah, it's all of those things. But we're going to build it.
Yeah. So we're not going to do dynamic and static correlation. Yeah. That's impossible. It's not going to work. But
it's a challenge.
But we have our family of technologies, and you got that IAST piece, which is just right in the middle.
Just bridges it all together.
Exactly. Yeah. It lives half in the I know you had an IAST session, but really IAST sort of borrows the strength of our existing, you know, static analysis and dynamic analysis. It took from a lot of the knowledge that we have in static analysis from almost 20 years of knowledge in static analysis and our experience with dynamic analysis, and put that together into this agent. And now that's going to contribute back and sort of not just draw from these technologies, but now pull them together, and that'll be sort of the hook that brings all this together. So that's really exciting, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, well, look, Shahar, I think we're out of time, unfortunately. It's been great talking to you. Really, 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 really appreciate it. I know it's late for you. It's dinner time for me, and I'm hungry.
See, that's
only 3 o'clock in the afternoon for me, so this is all right.
It's not even noon yet here.
But look, it's been great. Thanks a million for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.
Okay.
Look forward to it.
Thanks again for listening to Application Paranoia. Thank you, Chris.
Oh yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Hey. Oh, it's good to be here.